Hi, and welcome to my presentation. I'll tell you a bit about my project called Chimera Linux. But first, let me introduce myself. I'm Daniel Kolesa. I'm a developer at Igalia on the WebKit team. I've been contributing to free and open source software since 2007. Since 2009, I've also been using FreeBSD. I currently maintain support for the Power Architecture at Void Linux. In my free time, I do game development, but that's sort of a minor thing for me. But what is Chimera Linux? Well, it's a new Linux distribution which might not sound very exciting by itself, but it was created completely from scratch with FreeBSD-based user land, which should be pretty interesting by itself. It's also fully built with LVM Clang toolchain. As far as the C library goes, the robust muscle-libc project is used. The whole project follows the rolling release model, which is not to really achieve, bleeding-edge software like many rolling distributions do. It's more like to simplify the release management of the whole project, make things easier for myself. Since I currently maintain the whole thing by myself, I don't really want to have to cut several releases and support them and take care of rebuilding the whole repo every time and so on. This also has some disadvantages, particularly you cannot really rebuild the whole system without incrementing every single revision number, but that's a minor trade-off I'm willing to take. The whole project is supposed to be highly portable and has several tiers of supported CPU architectures, with the first tier featuring the PowerPC 64-bit Little Endian, Arch 64, as well as x86 64. The second tier features RISC-V 64-bit, and the third tier has 64-bit PowerPC Big Endian. It does not really mean the distribution only really aims to support 64-bit architectures. It's just that these are what's primarily interesting for the project right now, and if there's enough demand, more stuff may be added later. The project is supposed to be bootstrappable, so that you can compile it from source in different kinds of environments. This doesn't really mean bootstrapping in the same sense as in bringing up from complete nothing. It's more about the practical side of things, to be able to compile the system from source, in different places, if it's possible or if it's needed to actually compile it from scratch without having Chimera present. That's what you can do. There's a custom source package build system which generates binary packages for you. You can then install those binary packages on your system. For binary packages, we use APK Tools, which is a lightweight package manager created for Alpine Linux. For service management, the system called Dinit is used, which hasn't been deployed in any other distribution as far as I know. It's been around for a while, but it's not very well known. I like it because it's lightweight, but still has a good trade-off between features and complexity. It's dependency-based, it's supervising, so that those are some basic requirements I have when it comes to service management. It's a general purpose system with a graphical desktop, but you can really deploy it in any place, containers, servers, it's up to you. It does deploy a number of modern technologies, including Wayland and Pipewire. There's a repository which is split into several components. The main component contains sort of a default set of software, plus the core things required for boot. It also is supposed to provide some good defaults for more advanced applications, while the contrary repository provides other things which are not really supposed to be part of main. There's other repositories too. There's a non-free, which would contain things which would not be redistributable. And there's also experimental, which is sort of a staging area before things go into main or contrib. The system tries to avoid legacy stuff when possible. And this is not only when it comes to software, also when it comes to other things. For example, System fonts are by default shipped in the OpenType format, which allows us to have really nice font rendering thanks to the Adobe CFF Rasterizer in FreeType. What are my motivations for the project? Well, as many open source projects, I wanted to have some fun at first and start a community. I wanted to explore alternatives for common things in the Linux stack and while at it increase diversity in the whole stack. There's a lot of software which is specific to Linux, which makes some assumptions about your user land. I wanted to get rid of these assumptions as much as possible and to make sure that software portability is improved across the whole stack. Also, I wanted to make a distribution that I would be personally happy with using. I am reasonably happy using what I'm using right now, but things can always be better, and why not? Also, to learn from mistakes of other distributions and to fix these. A minor goal has been to prove that Linux is not GNU Linux. Chimera does not require any GNU components other than GNU Make to actually build, and it does not require any to actually boot either. Well, that is up to you, because the system does package a number of GNU components. I do not have anything against GNU or the GPL. It's more like to approach things from the alternatives providing standpoint. I think LLVM is also a great toolchain which enables us to do things which we couldn't do with GCC. It has a great support for sanitizers as well as things like control flow integrity, which I would like to enable at some point. It has actual usable link time optimization called FinLTO, which unlike classical LTO scales across multiple cores and has much lower demands on system resources. That means it can actually be deployed system-wide even for large projects such as WebKit, which would otherwise consume many tens of gigabytes of memory with classical LTO used, and sometimes wouldn't even compile at all because you would run out of memory. LLVM also has really good support for cross-compiling, which I will describe later. Now, system principles. It's explicitly not a minimalist or suckless kind of distribution. I think this kind of labeling is really vague and not really helpful in most cases. It's not a reactionary or traditionalist kind of project. You know, you see these every once in a while, thinking things were okay 10 years ago, let's restore how things were 10 years ago. I do not think things were okay 10 years ago. I think systemd did bring some much needed change into the stack. While I might not agree with all technical choices in systemd, and I do not use systemd in this project, I think it's fine to take inspiration when it's a good thing. If something is bad, of course, I get rid of it, but still, systemd is not the root of all evil, should not be treated as such. However, technical debt is a really bad thing, and the system aims to prevent it by default if possible. This is done by enforcing best practices, for example, in the build system. There should usually be one obvious way to do things. This is not really to limit user choice, there should still be choice, but there should be some good default for most people who do not really care about choosing. Well, it should also be self-sustaining, the tooling should be resilient and maintainable. I think it's important not to run into things like, you know, depending on some 10 years old version of some tool, which in the meantime broke API 2 times and there's nothing we could do about it at that point. It's best to avoid these things and have self-contained, simple tooling, which can be deployed on any computer and easily used. Portability is definitely not a joke, and neither is bootstrapping, as I already mentioned previously. The system takes special care to avoid writing complex things in shell, because I think this frequently results in maintenance nightmares, especially later on. I think good things should be easy to do and bad things should be a pain. The whole system should be built around these principles to make sure that people intuitively do the right thing and do not do the stuff they shouldn't do. Also, documentation is very important, and as many open source projects, this one is also lacking in this regard for now, but I hope this will improve in short to medium term. I think having strong opinions for development is a good thing. It gives the project a sense of direction, and also I believe even more important is fun environment, which is sometimes hard to achieve, but I think having a good community is a good start for that. You can be self-motivated in the short term. This happens, this works for some people. For some people it works for longer than for others. But in the long term you really need a good community around the project. Otherwise you will get demotivated real fast. I think technical only spaces and projects which advertise meritocracy and so on usually do not do the thing they think they are doing, and I try to avoid this. I think the environment should be fun and everyone should be welcome. As for early history of the project, I started the idea around 2015. It was a simple idea of Linux with BSD user land. The development then started a few years later. In the meantime, I've been thinking about it and getting some ideas and occasionally came across something, but I never really got to do any real work on this until May 2021. In early June, however, I already had a first working prototype. It had a bit under 50 templates, and at this point it was still using GCC and GNU userland. It was also using the XBPS package manager from Void Linux. The early prototype was a reimagination of the XBPS SRC system from Void, which is a similar system, but unlike ours, it's written completely in shell and has a number of drawbacks that I wanted to avoid. That's why I was redesigning it. It became Cports, which has the port's name, but it's not exactly like, for example, FreeBSD ports. It shares a number of concepts, but it really is its own thing. It has an integrated build system, which means if you want to actually build things, all you have to do is clone the Git repository of Cports and you can invoke the build system directly from itself. The system is written in Python and package templates are also just Python scripts. Python is used in a way which ensures that the template syntax is simple enough that even people who do not really program can understand it. I think Python is a well-suited language for this. I wanted to avoid inventing a completely new DSL because that would mean more code, more debugging, more bugs, you know. And I wanted to make this thing as simple as possible. It's also designed to be very fast with little to no build system overhead. If you want a specific example, if you compare building the muscle.libc in XBPS SRC and in Cbuild, it only takes about 9 seconds on my machine in Cbuild. In XBPS SRC it takes way more than 20 seconds. If you compare the CPU time utilization during both builds, you will see that it's actually about the same. It's just that XBPS SRC just spends a lot of more time waiting around and doing nothing. This is the inherent overhead of the shell, and there's nothing much that can be done about it, except writing things in a real language. Both systems use Linux namespaces for sandboxing, which means you can run them in a fully unprivileged manner. In fact, it is not possible to run Cbuild as root. It will just reject you because there's no reasonable way to manage user namespaces as root. This is what a template for Cbuild looks like. This is a modern template, not like it was when things started. And if you cannot read the small font, that's okay. The stream resolution might not be the highest. You can always grab the PDF and take a look later. In any case, first steps after having the prototype were to drop core utils and related software. I found this nice project called BSD Utils, which was aiming to port FreeBSD tools to Linux. At that point it was sort of bare and semi-functional, so the first thing to do was to help port those remaining tools and reach parity with core utils. After this, I also added some new ports of new tools which are not covered by core utils. This includes things like diff, grep, sed, you know, those things which are provided by other GNU packages. As far as porting BSD tools goes, the code is surprisingly clean and portable, and it was a really nice experience to actually port it to Linux. There's a few BSD quirks which are shared between most of the tools. Since they are shared, it means you have to write some portability layer just once and actually use it in all of these tools. One thing I regularly ran into was the lack of the reg start end extension in Muscle's regular expression library. This is not a standard thing because the POSIX does not specify it. However, it is used in FreeBSD and it is also provided in glibc. When it comes to Muscle porting, I replaced it with not using the extension, but just by using a separate buffer when needed, and so on. And there was also the tail tool, which was using the KQ event handling mechanism. In Linux, there's no KQ because that's API specific to the BSDs and macOS. But you have a number of other APIs which together make up equivalent functionality. In this case, this API was used to monitor files for changes. I just replaced it with Linux iNotify API, which more or less provides the same thing. Otherwise, it was a pretty uneventful port. Now let's take a look at dropping XBPS. The original plan was to use the FreeBSD packaging system. This turned out not really ready for our use, but we replaced it with Alpine Linux APK, which turned out to be a great fit. Why was not FreeBSD package manager ready? Because for one, it required a port to Muscle, which I did, and it was actually compiling and working. But there's a few components in the package manager which make it not suitable for this project, such as the dependency handling mechanism being incomplete currently, and also the shared library scanner is fully integrated and not really working in the way we wanted to work with the C-build system. So I ended up using APK and it worked fine. It was really quick to integrate and by mid-July I had a completely robust and complete system. The package generation code, that is the code which actually creates the package files, is completely custom and does not depend on APK. That is because in the current version APK files are just tarballs, so I could use native Python tarball module to generate them. While those tarballs are not completely plain, they contain some PAX metadata containing, say file checksums and so on. This is possible to handle through Python starfile module and it works okay. By mid-June, the GNU userland was actually mostly gone, but it was still using GCC and for the time being XBPS. By late mid-June, after I added the initial code for APK generation, I was focusing on getting rid of these, and by late June, both XBPS and CoreUtils were removed from the distribution. But why is APK used? Well, it's lightweight, but also surprisingly elegant and fully featured. It has a nice restricted dependency solver, which is constraint-based, and it's also fully transactional. It supports features which we use extensively, such as triggers and advanced virtual packages, which are also repurposed for tracking zonames in a really nice way. But about that GCC removal. Well, dropping GCC was by itself a fairly easy thing, because not much was packaged at this point, and it was mostly about adding a standard build of LLVM. Then, of course, I had to tell it to use its own runtime instead of GCC's. This is important at the bootstrap stage because in most Linux distros, when you compile binaries with Clang, you want them to be compatible with those compiled by GCC, which is the system compiler. Well, GCC provides some core runtimes and therefore by default LLVM also uses these runtimes. It provides its own runtimes, but they are not used on Linux because of those other distributions. So we just tell LLVM to use its own runtime, and after the bootstrap is done, or the first stage of the bootstrap is done, there's no longer a need to do anything because the GCC runtime is just not present in the first place. So LLVM will just pick up what it has. In any case, after integrating LLVM, I had to recompile everything with LLVM and fix those few errors that came up. I was expecting more errors to come up, but there were surprisingly few. Finally, I removed the GCC packaging entirely. GCC might get reintroduced into the repo at some later point, much in the future, as a thing for users to actually use separately from the distribution. But I do not have any plans to actually compile anything with GCC. Now let's get to cross-compiling. In order to describe how cross-compiling with LLVM differs, I'll first describe how it works with GCC. To understand cross-compiling in general, you need to know what a triplet is and what a cross-tool chain is. Well, a triplet, as its name suggests, is sort of a string which has three components. The first component is the architecture, then you have the vendor component, and then you have the OS environment component. So a triplet, for example, looks like x86-64, unknown Linux GNU for glibc x86-64 Linux machine. You have three triplets when cross-compiling. When native compiling, all three are the same. When in cross-compiling, you have the build triplet, which is the machine you are running. Then the host triplet, which the resulting executables will run on. And the target triplet, which is in most cases, even with cross-compiling, same as the host triplet. But there's one special case in which it is separate. And it's when you are cross-compiling a cross-compiler. Say you are cross-compiling from x86-64, so that's your build triplet. You are cross-compiling a cross-compiler which will run on PowerPC, so that's the host. And then you have the target, which is, for example, ARM. But as I said, most of the time, host and target are the same, and this is a really specific niche case. With GCC, you have a separate cross-tool chain, which is a sort of a bundle of GCC, libc, and other stuff for each host. Cross-tool chain is installed in a sysroot, which is a sort of similar to the root file system of your Linux, except for cross-compiling. It contains libraries and so on for the target you are compiling for. A cross-compiler consists of binutils, which provides the linker and assembler and some other basic utilities. You compile this first using your native compiler. Then you build a freestanding compiler, which would be GCC, which is not using any libc headers, and it does not have support for anything other than C and C++. It's stripped down, so it takes as little time as possible to compile. And of course, since you don't have the features available, you want to reduce it to a minimum you can use. In any case, the only purpose of this compiler is to build the libc, which is then needed to compile the final compiler, which will be installed into the sysroot with the binutils and other stuff. That means you need to compile GCC for every target you are compiling for, and then use the build system for the thing you are compiling to use a triplet prefixed version of GCC executable. It's kind of complicated, and of course it also uses a lot of resources to build the cross-tool chain, and building GCC is not really an easy or small task. It also requires specific integration into the build system. So can we make this better in some way? Well, with LLVM you have just one compiler for everything. You can use the same client you are using to build native executables to also cross-build for any target. Of course, even though the compiler is actually capable of emitting the code, you still need a cross-tool chain of a sort because you do not have the runtime for C and C++ and the built-ins available at this point. This is slightly tricky to build because you do not have a sysroot populated yet and compilerRT needs libc headers to build. In most distributions, this is actually solved because you can just use the GCC build sysroot to, you know, compile RT and other stuff. In our case, we cannot do this. So what we do is first install only headers of the muscle libc into the sysroot. Well, actually only into a temporary directory during intermediate build. Once we have the headers, it's possible to build compiler RT. You have to tell CMake to only attempt static libraries, because if you don't, it will try to run executables and this will fail because you do not have the runtime at all. Once you have built the core bits, you do not care about sanitizers or anything yet. You only build really the core built-ins library. You add this into the sysroot and then you can build muscle. Once you have muscle, you basically have what you need to compile simple C executables, but you still need libunwind, which you have to compile with unwind libnum, because you don't have it yet. And you need a C++ library, so you first build libc++ ABI with the node-std lib flag and CXS flags, because you don't have standard library yet. And then you build libc++ itself with the same CXS flags. Once you have this, your runtime is basically complete. But if you want sanitizers, you also have to build the rest of CompilerRT. This time you skip the built-ins, you just compile the rest of the more advanced stuff. Then it's really complete and you only have to tell Clang the target you are compiling for, as well as point it to the sysroot, which then the compiler can prefix things like include paths with. Since it does not really take a long time to build the runtimes, and it would be a shame to have to duplicate the packaging for every single architecture, we actually built all of them at once, and then split them by sub-packages. As far as integration into cbuild goes, there's a separate specification of host and target dependencies, with the host dependencies containing things like build system and other tooling which needs to be run. And as well as the CRUST toolchain, they are installed normally just like during native builds. Then you have target dependencies, which are installed with APK into the sysroot when cross-compiling. When native compiling, they are installed together with host dependencies, just in a normal way. You treat the cross-sysroot as the target APK's root, but there's a minor thing to solve. That is, the CRUST toolchain provides some files which the APK could actually overwrite. So, in order to prevent APK from overwriting those files, we have the sysroot contain APK database providing a dummy-based package by default, which only provides some virtual packages to ensure that APK does not overwrite anything, because it thinks it's already installed. In theory, that is really everything you need. In practice, you need various cross workarounds for different build systems. Cbuild already provides utility modules to treat several common build systems, so it contains those workarounds for cross-compiling by default, and for most software this works okay. In some software you still need separate workarounds because, you know, different things have different build systems and not everything is the same. The system also takes care of ensuring that correct C flags are exported for every target, and there's also a complete API for handling build profiles, which you can treat like objects in your Python build templates, and actually, you know, have every single target registered with cbuild available if you need it. It's a very simple and flexible API. But how about improving cbuild a bit more? Well, the first thing I did was ensuring that unit tests for everything ran out of bugs. This was not done during early development because it would get in the way too much with the pace I was refactoring at. But as things slow down a bit, it's good to run unit tests for everything and ensure they pass, because it might help catch you know, different bugs which might not show up during build. Something might build fine, but then it might crash. Unit tests are not run for cross-compiling because it's not possible to do so. I also greatly improved the sandbox, with network access now being disabled after the fetch stage. The build system has several stages. The fetch stage takes care of downloading everything from the internet, and then the system makes sure that no other stage can actually access the network. Then I also made sure that the container in which things are built is treated as read-only, except the actual build directory, as well as the destination directory and temporary directory, which is cleaned up. It's just a temporary file system. This ensures that the container remains consistent. You can be sure that the build will not modify it in some way which is unintended. The container environment is therefore fully sanitized, and we also take care to prevent breakout to the outside system by limiting what is mounted into the container. And of course, different things are mounted depending on the stage, so nothing can really access For example, some bad build could access sign-in keys or mess up your outer file system in some way. So this really is for both safety and security. Now, first boot. This is what things looked like when I first booted the system. It was a simple QEMU run with just a serial console and nothing else. But it was something at first. This was done in early October, and there was the Linux kernel 5.14, later updated to 5.15. This needed some build workarounds because the kernel build system likes to assume GNU tools, such as specific GNU features in sed. So I worked around these and eventually managed to build the kernel. Then I added the init system and set it up. Setting it up involved creating the core services suite, which is specific to Chimera and cannot be shipped by upstream. Unfortunately, this is not fully documented, but it does work for now at least. I also added a generator for initial RAM disk images for the kernel. I used initramfs tools from Debian, which is surprisingly nice and easy to port. I used it because it's small and modular, and also it's written in POSIX shell, unlike alternatives which are usually written in Bash, for example Dracut. We do not have Bash in the core system, so it's impossible to use something which would require it. So I used initramfs tools, and it was a really nice experience. I like it a whole lot more than Dracut. As far as the graphical system goes, the packaging pace has increased greatly, and by early November I had the Western Wayland compositor available. It also started showing that this might not be sustainable, and it is impossible to actually check for every single upstream for updates as one person. So I added update check. What is update check? Well, it's a simple tool which integrates with the build templates of cbuild. It checks the URL as well as the source URLs for upstream versions, and it will give you a nice summary of if your package is out of date or if it needs updating in some way. Well, this is automatic for most things, especially with many projects nowadays using the likes of GitHub and GitLab. But if something is impossible to verify automatically, you can still specify the custom URL to check, as well as the pattern to find to match for versions. This works much better than I initially expected, and we now have every single package having functional update check, and you can actually easily check upstream if you need to update this thing. And yes, it runs Doom. This was achieved in early December. It's a major milestone for the project because, you know, every computer-like thing needs to be able to run Doom. While at this, I also turned on system-wide LTO, which worked much better than I thought. Also, we needed bootloader, so I added grub. The reason I added grub was because it's universal and works for every target. Well, you can boot the system in other ways, for example with FE you can use FE stub and the likes of that, but for most other platforms you need some kind of bootloader, so grub was a good fit. I also added the Pipewire sound server because while testing Doom I noticed that there was no audio and I couldn't listen to that E1M1, so I added Pipewire and then things just worked. This showed another problem, and that is how to actually launch Pipewire in a reasonable way. Well, the answer to that is user services. How does this work? There's a daemon running as a system service which takes care of spawning and supervising those user instances of Dynit. This daemon is notified of new logins and logouts via a special PAM module. Packages can install user services in system paths, and then users can actually enable them. They can of course also have custom service files in their home directories, but system packages can install new user services and those can be easily enabled. What is managed through this system right now is the dbus session bus. That means it's no longer spawned in an ad hoc manner like in most pre-system D distributions. It's actually reliable and you can actually rely on having a consistent path for its listening socket and so on. Also, Pipewire and WirePlumber are both spawned through user service. This will be expanded in the future and a lot more things are going to use it. Now X.org, this is the Enlightenment desktop running on X.org in Chimera. I added X.org in mid-December. It was just a lot of boring packaging, so I'll not elaborate on that too much. I also added some window managers, notably PackWM at first and then Enlightenment and its EFL toolkit. And that reminded me I will probably need the GTK toolkit, so I also added the GTK toolkit. And one thing I ran into while packaging GTK was that GTK nowadays relies a lot on scalable icons in the SVG format, and for this it needs the LipRSVG library. LipRSVG is written in Rust language, so we need the Rust toolchain. Rust is kind of a pain to deal with because it's difficult to bootstrap, it's difficult to cross-compile, it does not have any good way to bootstrap from source, I was kind of saved by there being official binaries for x86-64 for Muscle, and those sort of worked. I say sort of because they do not work out of box. They depend on libgccs, and I worked around this by just simlinking it to libunwind.so. This was enough to let the compiler run and recompile itself for our environment. Of course, just like every major Linux distro using Muscle, some patching was needed for this, and I also needed to add more patches to deal with our Clang-only environment. Also, while at patching, I added custom vendor triplets into the Rust build so we could use the same ones as for Clang. I then generated custom bootstrap binaries for Rust, which would no longer have these drawbacks, and cross-compiled for PPC64LE and for Arch64. Then I had bootstrap binaries for these three architectures, and I bootstrapped natively on all of these. Other architectures, such as RISC-V and BigEndian 64-bit PowerPC, will be added later and they can be cross-compiled in the same manner. I did a special cross-compiling mode into the packaging, or special bootstrap mode into the packaging, which takes care of automatically generating those bootstrap tarballs for you, because it's a pain to do by hand. And if I can automate it, it's only a good thing. Now, multimedia. This is the Blender Big Bug Bunny movie actually working on Chimera without any frame drops or any rendering issues. So I made this just before the year ended, it was commented on 31st December, and it was a complete build of FFmpeg and most of its dependencies. This build is really comparable to most other distributions, it has all the features like AV1 codec support through Devitt and libaom, libvpx, x264, x265, on you know all these things. I also added the MPV media player. This means it's almost a usable desktop system. I mean, what else you need? Well, basically every system nowadays needs a web browser. I already had a web browser in form of links, but that's not something you would actually use with modern websites. So we needed a proper big web browser. But before packaging a browser, I decided to upgrade OpenSSL. I was previously using OpenSSL 1.1 branch, and I went straight to 3.0.1. This was slightly problematic because they changed some APIs as well as made sure that some legacy cryptographic algorithms are not actually available by default nowadays, and if something expects these, you have to use the provider API to actually load the legacy provider, and this is not really suitable for everything yet. But I managed to work around all of the issues and eventually I had OpenSSL 3. The reason I updated at this point is because OpenSSL 1 has some real licensing problems. It's dual licensed under the OpenSSL license and the BSD 4 clause license. The OpenSSL license is basically Apache license 1, and neither of those two licenses are actually GPL compatible, which creates major legal pains when it comes to combining with GPL works. especially things like FFmpeg, which is GPL licensed, if you have all the filters available. So OpenSSL 3 solves this by relicensing the whole thing to Apache License 2. And that solves it because Apache License 2 is compatible with GPL 3. And therefore, every project which either uses GPL 3 or has the GPL 2 or later clause actually is legally compatible. I also started packaging initial pieces of GNOME. During this, I packaged WebKit GTK and its dependencies. This was mostly just boring packaging again, so there's no point in talking much about it. But eventually, I packaged also the GNOME Apfini browser, also called GNOME Web. And at this point, the template count was some 500 or more. The actual package count is actually much higher, because we have sub-packages for things like development files. So the actual number is more like triple this number. And here it is, the Epiphany browser fully running without any rendering problems or any other problems. It's still in the Enlightenment desktop. I would like to package GNOME later, but more about that later. In the future, well, I've already described everything when it comes to progress until now, so there's nothing much else to talk about. But in the future, I would like to migrate to APK Tools 3, which should come around May or so, and it brings a completely new package format. That's why I'm waiting with when it comes to releasing official repositories and setting up some kind of CI and so on, because I would have to handle some transition path from the old format to the new format. If I wait, this will be avoided, and I can use the time I have to improve the packaging as much as possible so it is ready for production and does not have to be modified extensively later. Also, packaging the GNOME desktop is a goal, and I would like to package at least the core of it so you can bring up a desktop session and use it. It does not have to package all applications in the main repo. Also, extending the user services framework is a major goal, and also migrating my own systems to it, because if I migrate my own systems, then I can expose issues faster, and dogfooding is important. Also, when it comes to more low-level things, improving system documentation is an important goal. I should write manual pages for, say, the service management framework, which is Chimera-specific, and I should also harden the binaries a bit more. This will involve enabling undefined behavior sanitizer on all targets, as well as Clink CFI on targets which support it, which is currently, unfortunately, only x86-64 and ARCH64. There's also a Fortify source, which is enabled in CBuild, but there's no headers to provide the fortified implementations of standard functions. There's the standalone Fortify headers project, which is used by Alpine Linux, but it's not suitable for us because it makes some sketchy GCC-specific assumptions and does not actually work with a client toolchain. There's also locales, which currently only exist as empty implementations in the muscle libc. I would like to provide a third-party solution providing actual proper locale support so people can have localized dates and currency formats and things like that without only having basic translations. When it comes to login tracking via UTMP and WTMP, this is the same story and it's only empty implementations in muscle. So I would like to eventually provide a third-party solution to this. In any case, thank you for listening, and if you want to get involved or just want to check it out, there's the link to our website, as well as the link to our GitHub organization. We also have chat channels at IRC, at OFTC, and also the Matrix channel, which is linked to the IRC channel. So whichever you prefer, you can join either one and actually talk to the same people. In any case, thank you and see you over there.